Our next speaker is Brad Gordon. He's associated with the Water Resources Center at the University of Minnesota.
All right, thank you. So this is a study that's been going on for 3 years now. So 2013 is when it started, constructing a treatment wetland in southern Minnesota. I joined it in 2014. So I'm working in Chris Linhart's lab, University of Minnesota, and then we're funded through the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. So jumping into the objectives, the primary goal of this was to look at the effectiveness of an on-farm edge-of-field treatment wetland at removing mostly nitrogen, so nitrogen in nitrate, and then also looking at phosphorus as total phosphorus and orthophosphorus from tile drainage water only. So that's the main goal, looking at the smaller design and seeing how well it can reduce nitrogen that's coming out of tile drainage. Second objective is to look at the biomass production and bioenergy, but that's mostly Josh Gamble's part of this project, so I won't be touching on that today. But thirdly, hopefully at the end of this, I'll have a little time to talk about some of the ecological components that I isolated in mesocosms in the lab, so microbes, vegetation, soil, and so on. The location then is in southern Minnesota, Martin County. It's on Darwin Roberts' property on Elm Creek in the Blue Earth River watershed. So water from this field then does eventually make its way to the Mississippi River, so it's connected in that way. The design, it's a three-cell design, and so that increases the residence time in the wetland, hopefully increasing the denitrification in the wetland. And it's separated by berms then, and forcing the water to flow back and forth across these three cells. Water is supplied entirely from tile drainage beside what's inside this very small catchment area. And that area then is half an acre total. So that includes the wetland and the berm. So the actual area that's being that's having treatment, so the area that's inundated during storm events when the wetland is actually wet, is only a quarter of an acre. So this is a much smaller wetland than you see throughout Iowa for these treatment wetlands. So the watershed area is approximately 25 acres, and so it's still the wetland, that treatment area is about 1% of the drainage area. And so it's a very small drainage area, like I mentioned. So Iowa CREP wetlands need to have over 500 acres of drainage area to qualify for CREP. So this is then looking at how well these smaller wetlands, if landowner adoption improves because they're giving up less of their acreage, giving up less production, so half an acre away from production in this case. So we're trying to see how this can fit in and what kind of role it can play and how well it works. So I'll be talking fast again throughout the results here because I have a lot. So hopefully we'll instigate some more discussion afterwards. So first surprise though with the smaller wetland, it's in 2013, we noticed when we were analyzing the data, we had a lot of infiltration. Over 70% of the water was actually infiltrating. This does have a clay liner at the bottom. We didn't use plastic even on the smaller size wetland. We used local soil, and we were still getting over 70% infiltration. And again, in 2014, similar, about 70% infiltration in this wetland. Then I installed some wells and piezometers throughout the wetland in 2014, the end of 2014, to see if I could trace where that water was going, what's happening to the nitrate and the phosphorus as it's going underneath the wetland in that subsurface flow, if we're still having a productive treatment wetland, even though we're kind of losing that water to infiltration. And that infiltration is not entirely a bad thing. So one benefit is reducing the peak discharge. So here on this graph, the top graph is inflow in 2014, bottom graph is outflow in 2014. So you can see, minus the flood event where we had to take the equipment out there in the middle, you can see quite a reduction in flow going directly to Elm Creek during those high flow times. So it's a small, again, it's a small watershed, small design, so it's not huge volume of water that it's reducing, but it's playing its part in reducing that peak flow, so then we have less of that volume in the creek during those high flow events, if that makes sense. So infiltration is, again, causing another pathway for that water to slow down as it's going through the wetland. Now, getting to the main component that we're studying in this wetland is nitrate, nitrogen reduction in nitrate. So 2013, the first year that this was constructed, started measuring in May of that year, and it had very limited vegetation cover, very slow establishment of vegetation. If you can see that photo up on the top, that's what it was in the middle of the summer. So that meant only 1% of surface reduction of nitrate, so inflow to outflow. But we had quite a bit that was infiltrating. And then based on a paper that was looking at potential denitrification in subsurface flow in our region, we assumed about 50% reduction in subsurface flow of the nitrate. So taking that into consideration, then denitrification and subsurface flow before it reaches the creek, a total of about 39% reduction in 2013. So total reduction of about 140 pounds. Of nitrate if about 360 pounds came into the well. In 2014, we saw some improvement as that vegetation was able to establish. Much improved on surface removal, so about 17% of the nitrate was removed in surface flow. And again, assuming that it was 50% reduction in subsurface flow, total of about 51% reduction of nitrate. And that was assuming about 470 pounds of nitrate coming into the wetland. So 240 pounds of reduction. So then to clarify that too, 51% is assuming that 50% subsurface flow reduction. But with the wells and piezometers that I've been able to measure this year, I don't have the 2015 data in there this year. Although I'll mention too, 2015, we've had fewer large events, so no water's actually left the wetland. It's all infiltrated because it's come in slowly throughout the year. So it's going to be pretty much entirely denitrification in this case. And in our wells, though, water that's flowing from the ag field, so the perimeter that's closest to the row crop, is having about 10 milligrams per liter of nitrogen as nitrate. But then just going a few meters into the wetland, all of my wells are near 0 milligrams per liter of nitrate. So I still have to look at the isotope data. We're waiting on that last bit of analysis from the lab to look at that to see if I'm actually getting dilution of that water, of that nitrate, or if it's actually being denitrified in the subsurface flow. So with that, I'm assuming 51% is going to be a minimum reduction in this treatment wetland. And that's comparable to many of the other treatment wetlands that we have in our region, about that 50%, 50 plus percent. And then just to mention too, so it does show some potential for phosphorus reduction. Again, this is with the disclaimer of oversaturating with phosphorus. It's a young wetland, so it has some more time to have more phosphorus in that soil, but at least from inflow to outflow, orthophosphorus is showing reduction 76 to 86% in 2013-2014. So it's showing potential, and again, I'm waiting to see. I've been sampling the wells for orthophosphorus and for total phosphorus to see what's going on in subsurface flow as well. But it's showing potential at least for phosphorus reduction from tile drainage in those 2 years. And again, total phosphorus 68-69%. But then, so going to the ecological component then, I was able to look at some of the soil and microbes and vegetation that's in this wetland to see if we can improve some of the components of this treatment design in the future if we go with these smaller wetlands, because we have interesting components like reed canary grass that's coming into the wetland. So it does, the wetland does dry up for the most part, July through harvest. So that allows a little bit more vegetation like reed canary grass rather than cattails to establish in this wetland. So I wanted to see if reed canary grass did come in, what kind of impact would that have? I also wanted to look at the microbes in the soil to see their population, their density, compared to older wetlands. So I isolated the soil from this treatment wetland, that's the two-year-old wetland. I also took it from a nearby 10 to 15-year-old restored wetland that's treating nitrate, and took soil from a remnant wetland near campus. And then I put them in these 100-gallon stock tanks, the mesocosms, and then planted either no vegetation, fringed sedge, so native species, cattail, or reed canary grass in these mesocosms on top of the soil. So I had sand in the bottom and then 6 inches of wetland soil on the top of these tanks. And then took samples from those to look at the DNA analysis. So Some of the results then from the denitrifying microbes DNA. We used the NOS-C primer. So this is looking at if there's that gene in the microbe, then it'll show up in our qPCR analysis. And I'm looking at the copies per gram of soil. So it's this population density of the denitrifying microbes in the soil samples. So looking at the results here, the on the far left, that's the two-year-old wetland, the one that I've been talking about, has significantly lower density of these denitrifying microbes compared to the middle one there is the 10 to 15-year-old wetland, and then the especially compared to the remnant wetland. So that begs the question then, how do we improve the efficiency right away? Can we improve denitrification in those first couple of years? So I took that soil out when that wetland was only 2 years old. So seeing if that's going to improve over time and what we can do to improve that. There are some methods that are being done out there, but just something to think about for this wetland. And then I shrunk the experiment down a little bit for looking at putting nitrate into these mesocosms. So I put 8 to 9 milligrams per liter of nitrate into these mesocosms here. And then over 10 days, I measured how much of the nitrate was reduced inside of the mesocosms. So I had one tank of just bare soil represented from our constructed wetland. And it did have a significantly less reduction than the other two wetlands of just bare soil. And again, kind of correlating with the population of the microbes. But then the vegetation kind of skewed that comparison to the microbes. So reed canary grass seemed to do very well at reducing the nitrate that was in these mesocosms. And then the sedge was kind of inconsistent. So the type of vegetation that I'll be looking at in these mesocosms, I'll continue to replace them and then use some of the prairie. We have a wet prairie mix in the wetland, so I'll take some of those species and see how they compare to the reed canary grass as I continue on. So those are some of the early results. So it seems like reed canary grass isn't going to decrease nitrogen reduction in the wetland, but it's going to raise questions about biodiversity in the wetland. So the discussion then, conclusion first is that the wetland in the year that the vegetation was established has at least 50% nitrogen reduction from the tile drain flowing in and surface removal and subsurface removal combined. So it's a small wetland. So with landowner acceptance potentially increasing and we have more of these smaller wetlands, can they accumulate to reduce target amount of nitrate in our region? So a question to consider from that. And then could the vegetation be used for biofuels? So we're kind of looking at that if it's part of maybe a buffer strip nearby and they're able to harvest it. Since our wetland does dry up during the harvest season, they could go in there and potentially remove a lot of the vegetation. So a question that we're still pondering there. And then how can we improve the microbial populations in those first few years to improve denitrification? So these are my acknowledgments. The one person not listed here is Tim LaPara from Civil Engineering at the U of M helping me with DNA qPCR. So thank you.
A lot of questions for Brad.
You might have mentioned it before I came in, but did you measure pH and do any mapping with that, geospatial work on pH around the area, or just measuring within the wetland and outside, soil itself, which is the mesocosm?
No, not for those 2 years that I was looking at. So I do have some of that from this year, a little bit, but yeah, not from 2013 or 2014. We didn't look at pH, that was the question, yeah.
Any other quick questions? Okay, thank you, Brad.